I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, May 14th.
Today, CDC is updating our guidance for fully vaccinated people. Anyone who is fully vaccinated can participate in indoor and outdoor activities, large or small, without wearing a mask or physical distancing. If you are fully vaccinated, you can start doing the things that you had stopped doing because of the pandemic.
Wait, what? Why is that different today than it was a week ago? But that is Centers for Disease Control Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky announcing their new guidelines for wearing masks yesterday. And while they had faced some criticism for being too cautious about when fully vaccinated people could safely go without masks, they used to say mainly outdoors and still while distanced. Now they're going beyond what some public health experts are comfortable with in saying fully vaccinated people can go maskless, except in a few specific circumstances, like on public transportation or in healthcare settings. And they did say that people still need to follow their state and local guidelines. And New York and New Jersey have said their respective health departments are reviewing the new CDC recommendations, but the old ones still apply. Some labor groups and businesses are also not ready to expose their workers to unvaccinated, unmasked folks too, and have said their guidelines won't change. They won't know everybody who's coming into the store, for example, whether they're vaccinated or not, so they'll require for everybody. So let's try to understand the new guidelines and what they mean for you and for everybody with Dr. Stephanie Silvera, epidemiologist and public health professor at Montclair State University. Dr. Silvera, hi. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thank you for having me back.
Dr. Silvera, is this science or is this politics? Why did this suddenly flip on the basis of, I think, the same science that we've known for weeks or months?
You know, I think a big part of what's playing into this, and unfortunately, as we've seen with this pandemic, it's been sort of, we've been unable to extricate politics from the science all the way along. But I do think that the science is more and more heading in the direction that people who are vaccinated are very well protected. These are highly effective vaccines in terms of not only COVID symptoms, but transmission. And I think that really is a big part of what we're seeing come into play now. I think the other part that's likely playing into this is that more and more people are getting vaccinated. And so the goal of herd immunity is to reduce the possibility that somebody who is susceptible will come in contact with somebody who has the virus. As more people get vaccinated, that probability decreases, and we can start to reopen the world and, you know, take our masks off.
That's a really important point. It's not just about the individual. It's about the community. So Mayor de Blasio was just on announcing that New York City is well below a 2% positivity rate. So if there are relatively that few people out there who might even be carrying the virus and you're vaccinated, then it's safer to go maskless than it would have been a month ago with a 6%, whenever it was, a 6% vaccination positivity rate or something like that for the same vaccinated individual. Is that part of it?
Yeah. So what we're seeing right now, of the total sort of New York State population, I think it's 41% of the state has been fully vaccinated. You know, in New Jersey, I think it's for people who are at least 12 and above, people who are eligible, 50% are fully vaccinated. So if you have fewer people who are sick and fewer people who are susceptible, that means that the virus cannot spread as quickly. Again, a really important caveat, though, is for people who are susceptible because they're either not vaccinated or they're immunocompromised or they're just not eligible yet due to age, they can still contract this virus. And any host is a potential for the virus to continue to mutate. So we're not completely out of the woods yet, but we are certainly much closer to the end or the other side of this pandemic than we have ever been.
And there had previously also been a messaging critique lobbed at the CDC by people like Dr. Lena Wen, the former Baltimore Health Commissioner and Washington Post medical columnist now, who also came on the show to say requiring vaccinated people to keep wearing masks lessened the incentive to get vaccinated. If you had to act as cautiously as the unvaccinated and it wasn't really medically necessary, then you were disincentivizing hesitant people from getting vaccinated. Did you share that critique? And do you think that's part of what the CDC was trying to correct yesterday?
I do think that that's part of what they were trying to correct. I think we also have to recognize that science is iterative. We learn as we conduct more studies and as time goes by. And in terms of illnesses and viruses, this is still a relatively new one. And I think that erring on the side of caution was a good idea. But I think now that we know more, we can adjust our guidance and our information in a way that still follows the science. I will also put in a plug that we need people who are trained to do public health education being part of this conversation, because it's their job to understand the science and translate these really complex guidelines in a way that is, I think, more easily understood by the general population.
I do want to bring up this weird juxtaposition of a story that's been breaking around the New York Yankees this week at the same time that the CDC released these unmasking guidelines. And curious if you have any take on the Yankees having 8 people fully vaccinated with the J&J who got COVID in the past week or so. Only one of the 8 was symptomatic and only for a few days. But still a cluster of vaccinated people like that is unusual as far as we know. Have you seen that?
I have. And, you know, I think it's very easy to look at that as an example of why we shouldn't be taking our masks off or potentially people saying vaccines don't work. The reality is, however, that the J&J vaccine has been shown to be about 66% effective at preventing these lab-confirmed COVID-19 cases. All of these individuals on the Yankees had the J&J vaccine. But when you look at the population that was at risk here, that was exposed, they had about 50 to 60 people that they were traveling with between coaches, staff, and the team players. 8 cases is still 87% effective in preventing lab-confirmed COVID-19 in this population, meaning that the vaccine is actually doing exactly what we needed to do in terms of preventing symptomatic illness and not allowing this to spread wildly through the team. If this were an unvaccinated group of 50 to 60 people, those numbers of cases would be much, much higher, and there would be the likelihood that people would be hospitalized and potentially die.
That's a great point on looking at this in the context, because the headlines have been 8. You know, Gleyber Torres, the shortstop, plus 8 members of the non-player staff, 7 other members, I should say, 8 total, the one player and 7 others, all got COVID and they were all vaccinated. But the other way to look at it that you bring up that I have not heard in most of the media coverage is that if there were like 60 people in that traveling entourage, it would be about the percentage you might expect from a J&J vaccinated group, and it could be seen as really a big success story because only one of them got any symptoms at all and so mild that they were gone in a few days. And so it's, you know, statistically, it seems like a case of the vaccines working really effectively.
It is. And this, you know, in epidemiology, we say denominators matter, right? It's out of how many, right? 8 cases might seem like a lot if you're thinking about the team, but this is the team, the coaches, the staff. And I think it's also really important to note that the coaches and staff had been in, because of the rain delay, in a smaller indoor space than where the players were. And we know indoors are just more dangerous in terms of transmission. It sets up a higher risk environment. And so it's also not surprising that we're seeing more of coach and support staff and fewer of the players who are testing positive.
And I also see relevant to this that the CDC, among the things that it has changed recently is its definition of a breakthrough case. So a breakthrough case used to be described as anybody who tests COVID positive after being fully vaccinated, but now I think they're calling a breakthrough case only people who are hospitalized, which is hardly happening at all.
Right. And because at the, you know, what we are, the initial goal for the vaccine and what they've been tested to do in the clinical trials was prevent hospitalization and death. And these vaccines have been not just highly effective, but more effective than most of the other vaccines that have been on the market for decades. So this is actually a really incredible case study on vaccines that work and how you navigate through a pandemic using vaccination.
And by the way, Dr. Lena Wen, who I mentioned before, tweeted that masklessness should be tied to vaccination rates in the community to keep the incentives high. And that's what we were talking about before, right? Masklessness
right.
at the local level should be tied to vaccination rates in the community. It's not just about the individual.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at the CDC right now, the percent of the population that is vaccinated, there's a pretty big range. In Mississippi, for example, 32% of the vaccine has received one dose, 25% are fully vaccinated, compared to places like Vermont, where 63% of the population has gotten at least one dose. And so I think it's really important to note that the CDC is issuing guidelines and recommendations, but that's not policy, and that the policy really needs to take place, not just at the state level, but at the local and hyper-local level, because that is where the risk is really arising. And so you need to have different policies based on different risk profiles.
Nick, a school psychologist in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hi, Nick.
Hi, good morning, almost afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. So I live in the Bronx. I'm actually a school psychologist in Rockland County. And I know that it's, you know, I think everyone is feeling pretty anxious about the return to normal. But also, I think people are wondering, especially with the new guidelines coming out, what that's going to mean for people under 16 or what it means for school professionals and other professionals across the board moving forward as we sort of hope for a better and healthier tomorrow.
So I think that for schools, you know, we are actually getting very close to the end of the school calendar. For kids now 12 and older who are now eligible, even if they start the vaccine yesterday, as my 15-year-old did, he's not going to be considered fully vaccinated until, I think, his last week of school. So I don't see the policy at the school level really changing terribly significantly this academic year. I think as we head towards the fall for, you know, potentially middle and high school age students who are more likely to be vaccinated and potentially be fully vaccinated, I think that we will need to really consider whether or not they need to wear masks in school during those times. That said, I am a proponent of, we've seen that masks reduce not just COVID transmission, but cold and flu. We had, you know, some of the lowest flu case rates and death rates in history. And so I don't want to see masks fully go away. I think there's a role for them.
And what about for kids under 12 who are not eligible for any of the shots yet? What does the no mask requirements even indoors for vaccinated people mean for them, in your opinion?
You know, I think there has been this idea that kids don't get COVID or they don't get sick, and that's not entirely true. They're less likely. I think that as a family, you need to make the decision on whether or not your children are at risk and what you feel comfortable doing. I know, you know, I wouldn't feel comfortable having my children, my daughter is not yet vaccinated, be at a concert yet without a mask because she could become sick. And there's really, we don't have good predictive models for which kids are going to get very sick and which ones are not. I think, again, as we move forward, you know, we're going to be outside more for the summer. We know that those case numbers, they went down last year. I suspect they will again. The transmission rates are down, so risk is going to be generally lower. I think as we get back to September, we're going to see whether or not under 12 is eligible to be vaccinated. For Pfizer, that may come into play. That's moving along pretty quickly. And then are people willing to have their children be vaccinated? And I think that's really, you know, for a lot of this, for adults and children alike, that's the crux of this. Are we going to get those few people who are still not willing to get vaccinated to become, to, you know, to participate in the vaccine program?
And I see that the CDC said that separate guidelines for summer camps and for schools will soon follow yesterday's update for vaccinated 12 plus. Nicole in Metuchen has a related question, I think. Nicole, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. I'm a huge fan. Yes, my question was related to kids. I have a 3- and 7-year-old who obviously can't be vaccinated. My husband and I are. So I felt like it was a little premature for the CDC to announce, you know, anyone that's vaccinated can be unmasked indoors. You know, outdoors I'm more okay with, but, you know, how does that protect our children? How does that protect the little ones, especially if we don't know how long we as vaccinated people have antibodies for? You know, I don't know if that's known. That was really my question.
So, right? Yeah. Right now, the studies about how long the immunity lasts with the vaccine are ongoing. And I think that we're going to, over time, find out whether or not a booster is required or necessary. I understand the concern about children. And what I think is a way to look at this is if people choose to continue wearing a mask, whether that's outdoors or indoors, we should not yell at them. You know, I know there have been people in other parts of the media who have said you should confront those people. We don't know what individuals' health risks or comfort levels are. And so if you have children and you think that they should continue wearing masks indoors, I think that we should all allow that. I don't think that, this is not a time to start being, getting into people's faces and yelling at them about their children continuing to wear a mask. They're unvaccinated. And I think that that is really the safest route for them.
And, you know, part of the Yankees' response to their outbreak was to go back to mask wearing around other people, which they had stopped doing just in their circle because 85% of their team and staff were vaccinated, which I think is herd immunity by almost anybody's definition. So how does that fit in with Nicole's question and with the new CDC guidelines that vaccinated people don't any longer need masks?
So, you know, I think a few things that we know pretty well is if somebody who has COVID wears a mask, they're much less likely to transmit it to susceptible individuals. And so if you think you've been exposed, if you are showing symptoms, then really the good thing that you can do for your community is to put the mask on. And I think the Yankees are showing that and demonstrating that. I will go back to my argument about the flu and cold. You know, we know if we think about how we used to live, right? People used to go to work sick because we have to work, right? Yeah, there's no time off. Mm-hmm. I think we really need to start changing how we think about how we interact with one another. You know, we tend to be a very individual focused society. And I think this pandemic should have, if it hasn't, teach us that we are part of a broader community and our actions have an impact on others. And so, you know, from the very beginning, mask wearing has been something that you can do to protect the people around you.
Let's see if we can get one more caller in here real quick in our last minute. Priscilla in New Rochelle, you're on WNYC. Hi, Priscilla. 15, 20 seconds for your question. Hi.
Okay. Hi, Brian. My question is about conflicting information about how long the vaccine lasts. My second shot will 6 months will be over August 8th. So does that mean it doesn't work? Does that mean I need a booster? But there's no info on the boosters.
That's a great question. And I think we're going to be asking this one a lot more because Pfizer and Moderna both say that boosters are going to be likely necessary after 6 months to a year. What can you say in 30 seconds, doctor?
As I said, science is iterative. We're continuing to learn. They're continuing to collect the data on the people who are originally enrolled in those trials. And I think that if that changes, you know, they will put that information out there.
So we just don't know yet.
We don't know yet, but we hopefully will soon.
All right. And, of course, Pfizer and Moderna will be able to sell more vaccines if we go in that direction.
Absolutely.
So we have to take that into consideration, too. Dr. Stephanie Silvera, epidemiologist and public health professor at Montclair State University, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.